It's time for the podcast. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hey, everybody. It's Jane Hamill. Today, I'm doing something different. Do you ever get something in your inbox that you agree to, and then you're like, why did I say I would do that? Well, that's today for me, because a lovely woman in the UK is doing her third year, I don't know if it's a thesis or in grad school or whatever you call it, but her main research question is this, quote, how important is understanding of the business environment for a growing fashion brand? I would say it's hugely freaking important. I'm all about the business side and helping entrepreneurs make money and make a living. And then she's also doing, she says, I'm analyzing the role of a consultant for a fashion startup, which is exactly what you do, or part of what I do anyway, at Fashion Brand Academy. So here's the thing. I agreed to the questions, and then she sent them, and there's 12 of them. And I was like, damn, girl, this is going to take forever. So I'm going to talk this out, and I'm going to let you listen, and I think you're going to learn some things that could help you as an entrepreneur. So first question, could you describe the mission of Fashion Brand Academy in a few words? Yeah, there's the mission I tell people, and then there's like the real reason. I'll tell you, I've recently come to realize that I tell people the kind of bullshit answer that is true, but it's maybe not the reason I get up every morning excited to go to work anymore. It's kind of changed. So I first started Fashion Brain. The mission was I would like to save other entrepreneurs some trouble because I really did it DIY. I had no idea what the heck I was doing, and I failed a lot, and I wasted a lot of time and money. And I don't think you just have to go through that when you could just like, you know, take a $47 course or a $500 course and learn it from somebody who, you know, otherwise you wouldn't have access to the information. That's the reason I started it. The reason I stay now is different. The reason I stay, and I don't usually tell people this part, but I'm going to put it out there. I don't want women to have to rely on anybody else for their money, not their parents, not their dad, not their boyfriend. I recently turned 50, and I gotta tell you, it was a mind effer. Let's say that the 6 months leading up to it were really rough. I didn't want to turn 50. It's kind of a huge number, and I've never had a problem with my birthday ever. I always enjoyed every number until 50. And let's just say that since it's over and I'm now 50, it's great. But leading up to it was kind of a biatch. And as one of my friends said, well, you're a bit of a hot mess. I was like, can you be a bit of a hot mess or are you just a hot mess? But in any case, on the other side of 50, where I am like a month now, it's great. It's spurred some real changes, which includes absolutely just putting it out there and taking risks that I wasn't taking before and planning trips that I hadn't been thinking about planning and doing things. So in any case, that's why I'm going to tell you the real reason. Years ago, I was married when I was 26. Kind of a bad idea when you're that young, but I married what seemingly great guy. Then in the end, it wasn't so great. And I was the classic, didn't know what was going on behind the scenes. And we had this friend, these couples, and they used to come to my parents' cottage with us and whatever. Sure enough, he and the wife are together. And I had no idea. And he lied about it and it was awful. And anyway, we got divorced. And I had no idea. I literally had no idea. And I wasn't happy, but I wasn't like ever going to get divorced. I grew up Catholic and they're like, that's just not what you do, girl. He announced he wanted a divorce. I had no idea it was coming. I was shocked, but immediately relieved. And it was like, I was so glad actually, but I didn't know that at the time. So anyway, he takes off. He's got this other thing going. Thank God I had my own company. I had my own money. Like nothing really changed in my life, but what if it had? Right? Because I absolutely had no idea he was gonna, we had just been to therapy, just to put it out there. And the therapist asked him, would you like a trial separation? And he said, no, God, no, no. And then 2 days later, he said, I want a divorce. So I was like, oh yeah, let's just skip the separation part and go right to the divorce. So anyway, we get divorced, blah, blah, blah. Eventually, I decide after I have my store for 14 years and my wholesale business, my second son is born and he's got a lot of health issues. So I decide it's time to close my wholesale line, my clothing line, and my store. So I ended up selling it, and that was great. And I thought, I'm just going to stay home with the kids. This will be awesome. And 6 weeks in, I was like, I got to get the hell out of here. This is really hard, you know? And so I was teaching a class, and I, you know, didn't have fashion brand yet. And I didn't know what I was going to do. And I had sold the business, so I didn't have to worry to rush into something new because financially it was okay. But my husband is like, look, why don't you just teach? Just teach a couple classes and stay home with the kids. And I was like, you know what? I can't. Number one, it's too hard. Number two, I can't have you the only one who's bringing in any real money. I couldn't do it because I didn't know if he would, you know, suddenly leave me, right? And I didn't want to be that woman. And it happens all the time. So I'm going on a tangent here, but I think a lot of us can relate to the fear of not having enough money. And so when I'm working with Fashion Brain students and clients, I'm always focusing on the numbers. And a lot of people are like, well, I'm not in this for the money. I'm like, why not? Where's the money coming from? Like, what are you doing? So anyway, the real reason I do it is that so women have their own money, and that means they have their own power, and that means they can make their own choices. So, all right. So I'm really sorry, researcher in the UK. That was an incredibly long answer for number one. Number two, how did you come up with the idea for Fashion Brain Academy? I was coaching other retailers through my dear friend and colleague, Kathy Wagner at Retail Mavens. She helps retailers. And I was doing small, you know, independent specialty store consulting, open to buy, inventory, marketing for boutiques. And I really liked it, but I kind of missed working with creatives. Retailers, people who own retail stores, are just a little bit different personality-wise. And so I decided, let me do the same type of coaching and consulting, but I'll do it with designers or creatives, which is something that I really know and understand. Number three, what was the transition from your previous position to starting your own independent business natural? No, hell no. It was hard as heck. It was not natural. I had to learn a whole new way of doing business online. I had to start a blog, which I never wanted to do. And I resisted to the, you know, tooth and nail, bite and nail, I don't know. I resisted having to market myself. I had marketed my store like a boss, right? I knew how to get customers in the door. I didn't know when I started. God, I had to learn that. But getting, you know, people to pay you for your intellectual property is a whole different thing than saying buy this dress. So yeah, no, it wasn't natural at all. I hired a coach, very expensive coach, $7,200. And she taught me how to be a consultant. And within the first week, I booked my first client for $3,600. And so it paid half of itself. The you know, I really believe investing in education and in software. Like when I had my store, you know, years ago, gosh, you know, I don't know what year it was, but I paid $10,000 for an amazing point of sale system plus the monthly upkeep. And people thought I was crazy, but it saved me so many man hours, and it allowed me to, you know, highly target who bought what and then call them up and have them say, hey, we got this in that goes with what you have. So it paid for itself in, you know, 6 months. So yeah, no, the transition, I always owned my own business, but going from a product-based business to consulting was challenging. It was great, but challenging. How big is the team? It's me and about four other people, all part-time. Do you employ other consultants? I used to. I had this wonderful woman, Beth. She was great, and she'd had her own line and sold it to, you know, Nordstrom and everything, and vertical operation for manufacturing. She's great. I really just didn't want to manage other people after having a retail store and a big, you know, wholesale line selling to Bloomingdale's and Saks and Marshall Fields, Macy's, Saks, Jandel, all of that stuff, catalog business. I just didn't want to manage people anymore. So no, it's the only consultant is me. I do have a really cool, like my star marketing student, Erica Neumeier from rarederndl.com. She's technically a consultant with me in my Sell More Products Online program. And I love it. And she's an active practitioner selling her products. So it's really great that I'm able to you know, book her to help my clients and be part of that program. It's pretty cool. If you employ or would consider employing other consultants to help you, what kind of skills, past experience, and way of thinking would you be looking for? I'd be looking for somebody who has been selling products their whole life. By that, I mean they were the kid with the lemonade stand. They were the kid who had the side hustle, you know, flipping products on eBay, that kind of stuff. I would look for a true entrepreneur, not someone who just plays one on TV. What's the company culture and ethos? I don't know. We don't work in the same space. I'm a micromanager, so I think my team would say the culture is really easygoing until Jane wants it done a certain way, and then she's a real biatch. I would say that's probably what they say. Informal, all online. We use Slack as our communication tool, rather than emails going back and forth, and heavy, heavy, heavy technology focus, you know, simple stuff like Dropbox and video and whatever. But I make videos, training videos for my team, like, hey, this is how I want you to do the podcast. This is how I'd like you to create the graphics. I make it all on screenshot videos. So the culture is heavily detached and yet very warm and sweet, I think, at the same time. Nice, nice people and funny. We have fun. Do you remember your first experience of consultancy? Could you tell me a little bit about it? Sure. So the first time I started working with, I was working with another woman, like I said, Kathy, consulting with her. And that was fairly easy. It was really numbers based. And you would say we were doing inventory forecasting and open to buy numbers. It was a lot of spreadsheets. I really liked it. I didn't love meeting with the clients for two and a half hours, the way she would do it and going out to breakfast all the time. I was like, can we just do the work and go home? I don't need to have breakfast with everybody. That was a little awkward. But yeah, I liked it. I liked it a lot. I like helping people. I like teaching. And then my very first client where I booked the $3,600 one, I was scared to death because, my gosh, that's a lot of money. That was a lot of money back then. It's still a lot of money. And I just didn't want to do the wrong thing. So I relied heavily on my coach. And she walked me through how to help this person. And what I really did was listen to the client and really try to understand past what they said to what they really meant. So, for instance, like I say, I'm here to help others not make the mistakes that I make. That's what I say. What I really mean is, girl, you need to make your own money and not worry, not rely on your husband or your boyfriend or your mama or whatever. Okay. So I'm always trying to listen, even though I talk a lot, I'm trying to listen and read their signs of what they really mean and then really try to help them. I also just focus on intense honesty. Like, hey, let me know your financial situation. Do you have kids? What's feasible rather than just focus on the business? I think I'm not a life coach or anything, but your life is so entangled with your business that if you have major shizzle going on and you have a sick parent or, you know, a father-in-law with Alzheimer's or whatever, that needs to come up in the coaching. Otherwise, I can't help you as good as I can. Okay. That's assuming it's a private coaching in a group experience, which is what I do most these days. Like the Sell More Products Online is really a mentoring program, 7 weeks of a course on marketing your product and how to sell more, and then weekly group calls. And I love that. I love the group stuff. Okay. But the first one was scary as heck. Heck, heck, heck. And I also, you know, gave too much, I think. Like, I didn't have the structures in place. So when I say I gave too much, like, I think the client was a little overwhelmed. So that was tricky. Okay, number 8. What are some common issues aspiring fashion entrepreneurs face today? What skills are they lacking? Man, the game has changed so much since the interwebs happened. Used to be, you'd create a lovely collection, probably a full-on collection, and then you'd go shop it around at stores and, you know, try to get meetings with buyers. Today, the internet has happened. So the issues that they're facing is they're designers, they're creatives, they're not marketers. And trying to make them switch their creativity to being able to use it towards their product, use it towards creating stuff, and then use it towards getting the word out is a very, very huge challenge for a lot of right brain people. They just want to create the stuff and they want a magical business partner to come in and sell it and market it for them. And I'll tell you, the people waiting for that, you know, hoping to just get noticed if they just put out good work, you know, that's, you're tripping, man. That just, it's very rare that that happens. So the skills they're lacking is the ability to build a community, the ability to let people get to know them, get to trust them, the KLT factor, know, like, and trust before someone buys. You know, just the issues that they face is they think that you can just make a great product and that'll be enough, and it's not. Number 9, I noticed the Fashion Brand Academy helps brands on all 3 stages of business. Business, strategy, and creative. Which of these stages do you think is the most challenging, both for you as a consultant and for a fashion brand? You know, I'm shifting a little bit on that. My main three products are Sell More Products Online, which is a more advanced class for people who are already selling online and they want to sell more. And I have the Startup Course, the New Designer Program, and that's definitely startup, right? And then how to get your product into stores. And that's kind of any stage. I think the most challenging is getting people to realize that they should be a business person first and a creative person second. And so I do work with merchandising their line a little bit. I mean, I had a store selling stuff to women for 14 years. So being able to create a product that not just sells one piece, but sells over and over and they keep coming back is super important. There's a lot of people that can do that though. So I find what I'm really most helpful with is helping them get customers and get an audience. And it takes time. It takes dedication. It takes, you know, kind of like throwing your hands up and saying, I give up. Okay, I give up. I'm going to learn marketing. I'm going to learn how to get myself out there in an authentic way that people like and keep coming back. I'm going to do the work. And so I'll tell you, that's the most challenging part, finding people who are ready for that stage rather than where can I source this? Where can I source that? All of that is doable. The tactics are doable. You will learn that. It's all in the course. The mindset shift of using your creativity to sell a product is the most challenging part for them and for me and for every brand. I mean, even look at Nasty Gal. Nasty Gal just went bankrupt, right? They had a perfectly good product, absolutely fine. Obviously, Sophia is a genius. I mean, she went from selling on eBay, like flipping used clothing, to this tremendous empire. You know, I'm always wary when somebody is getting venture capital because it's not your own money, you know, and people are knocking her because she opened up really fancy offices in LA and stuff, but if it's not your own money, you do things like that, especially when you're young. So, and they were spending so much on marketing. And the fact is, that's what small independent designers are up against. You're up against companies that get $67 million in funding, right? In the online world. So if you can't market authentically in a way that's not with that cash, you're going to suffer. You're going to suffer. And then you're going to be relying only on wholesale, selling wholesale. And that is, then you're at the mercy of those stores. You know, there's, I think a balance is really an ideal way to have different selling avenues besides just online or just wholesale or just, you know, pop-up stores or whatever. But I'm a big believer in online. And I also notice you're going up against the Nasty Gals of the world until they, you know, implode on themselves. But yeah, dude, you got to have an audience and you got to be able to put offers in front of them on a regular basis. And if they trust you and they like you, they'll buy from you. They really will. All right. Number 10, what key skills should a consultant have in order to help a startup succeed? I think the most important skill is the ability to listen to the client, know what it is they really want. What mountain do they really want to climb? Because you can help them get to any mountain, right? You can teach them how to do stuff. And if you have a client that's coachable, they're going to be able to do it, right? But which mountain are they trying to climb? Like, make sure you have an end game in mind before you start working with anybody. And also, worry most about their success more than you getting money. Like, anytime you get a new client or a new customer, if you're selling your product for those selling products, the goal of the sale is not the sale. The goal of the sale is to have a raving fan, an awesome testimonial of how much they loved working with you. That's the whole point. Number 11, what do you think will have an impact on your role in 3 to 5 years time? I think my age. I think that the gloves are coming off. I'm stopping to care what people think more and more every year, which is a huge, huge bonus as an entrepreneur. I've always had a really short-term memory, which is kind of psychotic. Best example of that is doing a talk for the Girl Scouts of America, I believe it is, or the United States, whatever, the Girl Scouts. There's like, you know, hundreds of Girl Scouts in this room, and this little 9-year-old girl raises her hand. I'm doing this talk on, you know, my store and my clothing line and how successful and awesome I am, blah, blah, blah. She raises her hand and she's like, Miss Hamill, if you could, literally, this is what how she talks. She was so adorable. You've told us a lot about your success and your journey to achieving that success. Could you tell us about a situation when you failed, when business did not go as planned? And I was like, oh God, great question. I mean, yeah, of course. I've made a ton of mistakes. I've failed. I've lost money. Yeah, let me just give you an example. Yeah, yeah. Could not come up with one thing that had failed. That is psychotic, but that is a huge benefit to an entrepreneur to have the kind of denial, I guess you'd call it, if you were in a, you know, my mom's a therapist, so God knows I've been therapized enough in my life, kind of like the huge sense of denial that you don't even remember when you failed. You just blocked it out and moved on. That is awesome as an entrepreneur, because then you're less scared to fail because you don't even remember it. Kind of like, you know, people who have babies. Right? If you really remember the pain and the discomfort and everything, you might really think twice about that second child. But for whatever reason, our brains are able to sort of put that out. And if you have that, if the fear is bigger than the desire to try things and succeed, you can't be an entrepreneur, right? I think it's Steve Harvey has a great quote. The dream has to be bigger than the fear. And if it is truly, then you're going to be successful as an entrepreneur. Most of us, the fear just creeps in all the freaking time and knocks you to your knees over and over and over. And if you can't keep getting up, then you're not going to have any money in the bank and you're not going to have a good business. So what do you think will have an impact on your role? I think just the fact that I know what I want more and more, and I'm willing to just risk it and look stupid. Where do you see Fashion Brand Academy? I think that I'm transitioning a little bit. I'm doing a new site called janehamill.com. It's going to be geared for creatives, but any product, anything they make, and helping them really sell more and sell online particularly. I absolutely love Fashion Brand Academy. I'm going to be doing it. I'm going to be helping startups, but I'm going to be spending more of my mentoring time on companies that are a little bit more established, already selling the product, having some nice growth, and they want to scale and get bigger. Okay? Woo. So that was kind of fun. I hope you learned something. And I know this is all about me today, but my goal and the reason I even taped it is because I thought it might be helpful for you. So let me know if it was. I really would appreciate that. Head back to the blog and you know, go to the show notes. The links that I mentioned will be there. If you just type in, what would you want to type in? Jane's story. Let's do that. Type in Jane's story in the search bar of the blog. And you can grab the show notes and you can leave me a comment. Let me know. And if you could, you know, I'd love it if you would take a minute to leave an honest review on iTunes or on Stitcher Radio, wherever you are listening, because I'd love your feedback. I'd love to know what you like, what you don't like, how it can improve, what topics do you want to know next? You know, reach out. All right, jane@janehamill.com. Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening. And to the lovely, lovely Irina in the UK, I hope that helps. Bye, guys. Have a great day.